Welcome to another Standard podcast. My name is Dave Watson. I'm one of the investment specialists with Standard Asset Management. Today I'm chatting to Marius Obolzer, who heads up our multi-asset franchise. And today we're going to be reflecting a little bit on the fourth quarter of 2024. Marius, thanks for your time. And as always, it's great to chat to you and hear some of your insights and your views. I guess if we go straight into it, you know, quarter four was a quarter that we saw certain markets around the world giving back a bit of the gains that they'd made earlier in the year. Perhaps you could just initially upfront share some of the views of yourself and the team looking back at quarter four.
Hello, Dave. Happy New Year to you and Happy New Year to all the interested parties listening to our conversation today. And I hope it's prosperous, healthy, and happy. Look, I think the, breaking market returns down into quarters is always a little bit of a tough one because it's a very short period of time, a discrete period of time, but it was a very interesting quarter with a lot going on, and the contextualization of what took place in the fourth quarter I think is important. We obviously had an election in the United States in November, and while the outcome of a Trump victory was potentially not a surprise. Certainly had the polls surprise relative to the polls, it was surprising, but it was the magnitude of the victory with a Republican sweep, a red sweep as it's known, and that gave the Trump administration, as we head into 2025, a fairly wide mandate to bring about the adjustments that the Trump administration believe they need to take hold of. So I think that was probably the most important thing that took place in the quarter. And when you have an incredibly important outcome in policy and policy that affects the world. Mr. Trump is a polarizing figure. He's got a number of policies that he has historically enacted, most notably tariffs. Even the Biden administration had tariffs. But really, you don't often react to policy shifts. But with this election, the market was on tenterhooks around tariffs, obviously, and it's a big one that people will be talking about through the course of the year and watching how that plays out. But importantly, the enactment of tax cuts, which is part of the Trump policy stance for corporates, as well as, and importantly, deregulation in many industries in the United States. And if you sit with what drives profits at an economic or market level, it is ultimately limited red tape, limited regulation, which means speed of deploying capital is important. The removal of barriers for consolidation, mergers and acquisitions, etc. And then, of course, into the tax changes, etc., that will all boost profits. So it was an unusual environment where you've got such a big potential policy shift. And, of course, Mr. Trump is anything but normal in the way he behaves and the speed of which he's historically done things. This time is slightly different for a number of reasons, which we don't have to get into, and I don't think we've got time. But ultimately, that led to a slightly an environment where I think market participants were wanting to, one, lock in a number of areas of profits that had taken place through 2024. It had been an incredibly strong year for market returns in the United States, equities most notably, as well as a little bit of volatility in fixed income markets, but credit markets have done very, very well as well. So I think, one, you've got a period where historically, the seasonality going into the fourth quarter would be very strong. We got that in the United States, but we got a backing up of yields, predominantly because of the Trump policies are seen as inflationary. We got a strong dollar, especially in the second half of December, as people went on holiday in thin markets. And all of the strong dollar, the backing up of yields in the US and effectively pushing up yields around the world, a strong equity market in the US, although it was a little bit volatile, maybe not incredibly strong, but it was fairly well supported. And then in South Africa, we obviously had a weaker equity market as people were taking profits post the very strong returns that we'd had since May and the election outcome in South Africa. And I think that was felt both in bond markets, equity markets, listed property markets as well. well. And of course, going into a holiday period, it you know, moves are a little bit more exacerbated given the thin markets and illiquid period. So I think we had an okay month in terms, or okay quarter in terms of returns. I do think, sadly, we did get a little bit trapped with a very weak rand from about the 15th, 16th of December, especially. And then some backing up in yields in SA, where we overweight bonds and overweight South African equity counters. It did lead to maybe suboptimal gains, but we've had a fairly strong 12-month period in the funds relative to our internal benchmarks and relative to the peer group. Hopefully that answers the question, Dave.
Yeah, Marius, I think that's perfect. Thanks. And as you say, I think despite a quarter that was tricky to navigate, yourself and the team have put a great set of results on the table for the 12 months to the end of last year. Marius, then if we look at looking back on the quarter now, I mean, and where we stand coming into 2025, I mean, what would you say are some of the areas of the market that are really getting you excited at the moment?
My style is generally to start slow. I tend to, because of the hedge fund background, I tend to think in calendar years, and it's something that I try and get rid of, but it still sits with me after all these years. And there's nothing out there that I would suggest, and well, broadly speaking, that is a slam dunk, I think, from an opportunity perspective. I think we're sitting in a world, and that long preamble around what took place in the quarter and the Trump election outcome in the US, we've got a number of different political developments that are coming at us, and I'll get to that in a second. But I think the most exciting thing for me is not so much what we see in 2025, but a continuation, I think, of it's being appreciated now by the market and by market participants more fully than it was in 24 and 23. But we were running very long risk through 24 because we've identified ultimately, and I don't think we were early to this or anything, I don't think we've done anything special, but the willingness to remain very pro-risk given the secular change that's happening in the US and around the world, around a move from a manufacturing economy to a service-based economy, the development of AI as a subset of that. And that secular shift has kept us long. I think this is an incredibly rich environment to embrace these structural changes that are happening, not just in that movement from manufacturing into service-based economy, but the volatility that people like Mr. Trump bring about, and the disparate growth rates, the disparate returns on capital, the disparate valuation anomalies that exist around the world, different regions, different countries, different currencies. So it is really, a fertile opportunity set for guys like us from a top-down perspective. You know, historically, it's been a fairly mundane macro environment where people were able to generate alpha from the micro, from bottom up. And we saw that in our funds where the micro actually started really detracting from performance in that sort of second half of the year in our bottom up equity selection. But the macro really did keep driving returns for us. And I think it's incredibly important that people to understand that alpha is really hard to find. And in our minds, the way you both put a portfolio together from a beta perspective as well as the instruments that you use is going to be the key for developing alpha through the course of this year. That's the first point I want to make. The second one is obviously, I touched on it, is this deregulation in the US, the potential shift in taxes if the Congress approves the tax cuts that Trump's talked about. He hasn't put them forward yet. Obviously, it's very early days. And how the tariffs play out, that's going to bring about quite a lot of volatility in equity markets, in fixed income and currencies regionally. Dollar strength is something that is both a positive as well as a negative for us, and how much that dollar strength has been priced into markets currently, and that historic correlations with dollar strength, be it commodities, be it other equity markets, is something that does offer both opportunity as well as concern. The reaction to the Trump threat is real, and again, that will drive some volatility and some opportunities that come about. And I mean, if we just see what's taken place since the Trump election outcome, you know, you've had whether it was a Trump involvement or not remains to be seen, but just the threat of Trump, I think, has led to a more friendly outcome in the Middle East in terms of Israel and Hamas. Trump has been very vocal of his ability to potentially bring about a ceasefire and peace in terms of Russia and the Ukraine. It remains to be seen if he might be overstepping his abilities there or overpromising. But we've seen reactions from the Middle East. We've seen business leaders bending the knee, if you take a Game of Thrones statement, towards Trump. It is a very different situation now, and I think that that's going to bring about many opportunities for investors to get involved. Sectors, themes, currencies, commodities, etc. We've got a development in terms of fiscal in Europe. We've got elections coming about in Germany. We've had snap elections in France. There's the mulling of the abolishment of the debt brake in Germany, bringing about more fiscal pump priming. We've still got deficit spending in the US. So there's an incredibly supportive regime despite higher rates and the threat of higher inflation given the Trump policies. So an incredibly fertile environment, but not obvious and not smooth, which is great, again, for people like us who like volatility. And then, of course, you've got secular shifts. I would say secular because places like Argentina enacting completely different political and economic policies. Turkey's almost wrestling itself out of the basket case, and then other countries are throwing themselves into the basket case. We've got dividends and buybacks that are improving, not just in the US, but in Europe, despite the fact that Europe seems to be in a mess. Market more recently has broken out to new all-time highs, both at the mid-cap, or rather Stoxx 600, not just the Stoxx 50. So it looks really fertile out there, but landmines do abound. So hopefully we'll be able to find those opportunities, get them into the portfolio at the right time, in the right size and in the right way, as is our mantra.
Yeah, Marius, I think if we look at markets in recent years, they've been reasonably narrow in terms of where alpha has been driven from. And based on what you've said now, it sounds like we could see a broadening out of that. And I guess that's where clients can really extract value from a team like yourselves, looking at asset classes, geographies, et cetera, on quite a granular level.
Yeah, Dave, good point. I mean, you know, the broadening out thing is something that we've talked about, and certainly with our colleagues at JP Morgan have spent a lot of time over the last 12 months talking about. I still maintain that I think the US is going to do better than the rest of the world, but we can't ignore the valuation differences between the US stock market and other parts of the world. Clearly, the tariffs that Mr. Trump enacts or doesn't enact will make a difference in places like Europe and China. But equity valuations are marginally rich in the US. Capital goes to where it's treated best. I've say that often. And we've got incredible cash flows coming out of the big companies, the large cap tech stocks, the big 10, big Mag 7, etc. I don't see that changing dramatically, but I do think that as people feel better around some of these shifts that are happening in Europe. So as I mentioned, you know, stock market moving to new all-time highs despite real political concerns. I think that could bring about that broadening that you talk about. And certainly within the US, we expect to see a lot of broadening out in terms of equity performance, credit performance, because of those deregulatory actions that Trump does bring about, if he brings them about. So again, and with that backdrop, by the way, we're still sitting with, you know, call it US tenure at 4.75 to 5%. We don't see that blowing out meaningfully, although there's a little bit of risk to the upside. And from a carry perspective, that does give you something to lean into, and certainly corporate credit giving you a much higher yield than that, without a high degree of credit risk, although one might say that that's been priced very aggressively at the moment. So I still think the US is going to be the best place to be. I might be very wrong. The US has outperformed and outperformed meaningfully versus the rest of the world for some time. But one of the problems that we sit with now is the concentration of US stocks. We almost 70% of global indices and equities is made up by the United States S&P, if you like, and almost 38% of the S&P is made up from the top 10 stocks. So, 25% of the global indices may be made up with top 10 stocks. It's hard to see people really taking big alpha bets away from the US for the moment. But, things have to start with small moves, and maybe that small move that we're seeing here with the Europe breaking out, with China potentially having a flaw, with the changes we're seeing in South Africa does bring about a reallocation of capital away from the United States, but a lot will depend on the currencies.
Yeah, Marius, and I guess it does. It sounds like there's fertile ground for good opportunities where we stand at the moment, but obviously we can't consider this without talking about the risks associated with that. So, I mean, to quote another line that you often speak about is the fact that all assets are risk assets. Perhaps you could talk to us a bit about what are some of the risks that are top of mind for you at the moment.
Hopefully we're not going to scare our clients away and interested parties. But I think the risks are everywhere, and I don't think that they've changed dramatically. And I do think people are aware of the risks. So I think close to home, the most obvious risk is a breakup of the government of national unity, or an ineffective government of national unity. I would suggest that they've been of limited effect thus far. We've obviously seen some movement in areas like the Department of Home Affairs. But at the same time, we've got, the more recent commentary from Parks Tower around additional taxes on multinationals makes you feel uncomfortable. We've got municipalities that still seem to not be following the party line from the GNU. We do have qualified audits from Eskom and the like. So I think a line in the sand for many investors will be the budget taking place in February. What are the policy and actions that come from the new government of national unity through that budgetary process, and giving us steps to hopefully confirm some of the hope that we all have around South Africa's pathway? And the SOEs, public-private partnerships, we're seeing positives there, certainly in terms of rhetoric, but we need to see some concrete action. So that would be the big one. I've talked about politics and the Trumpian policies, but I mentioned elections in France. I mentioned elections in Germany. The abolishment of the debt brake. Clearly, the reaction from different countries in terms of the Trumpian policies, and especially something that I don't think is being talked about, although Trump would be the flagship of this, is the shift right. And when I say right, it's not, racism, right? It's conservative right, the rise of the right again, and it's been most evident in Europe, with some of the reactions that we've seen in places like the Netherlands, Germany, France, etc. So I think that's something that we need to keep our eye on, and it's a bit of a longer term risk. Fiscal concerns, when the US is spending circa 8% budget deficit spending. What does Trump do? That's putting upward pressure on yields. We saw that, and we talked about that in the fourth quarter. We saw the enactment of fiscal largesse impacting gilts in 2022. Liz Truss losing her job. The potential backing up of yields because of fiscal largesse, and touched on the German debt brake as an example. But at the same time, we've got a secular change happening in Japan. Japan's raised interest rates. They'll probably raise interest rates later this month again. We've got a backing up of US of JGBs in terms of yield. What does that do for the cost of capital around the world? We saw an example of that in August, where equity markets sold off aggressively given the repricing in yen. It wasn't the only reason, but these are the kinds of things that will help bring more volatility and concern for investors. Clearly, higher inflation as disinflation stalls and potentially even rises. And Kevin, our chief economist, has inflation kind of touching low levels and then backing up through the course of the year, which will make it much tougher for central banks to cut interest rates. And of course, the cutting of interest rates has already happened in South Africa. It's happened in the US, but it's becoming harder to justify cutting rates with growth rates being so good in the US, and inflation not falling. And of course, we've had things like the wildfires in Los Angeles, and that will that will create further upward pressure on owner's equivalent rent. It will create further demand pull from housing. It will create further spending patterns, which might well push inflation up in the short run. And again, that keeps central banks on hold. That said, growth rates are good. So higher rates, how does that translate into equity multiples? How does that translate into alternative multiples? The valuations are rich, as I mentioned. Equity risk premiums are high in places like South Africa and the United States. So bonds are cheaper than equities on average. That's debatable, but certainly optically that appears to be the case. We got high multiples and high margins, something that my colleague Warren Buha talks a lot about. So you could have a double whammy as multiples contract and margins fall if we get an air pocket. And then the consensus view, and I'm one of those consensus, I mentioned that the US exceptionalism, for instance, is a big one, that we're all crowding towards the US as the place where capital is treated best and where we want to deploy our capital. And then finally, we're not quite sure how China plays out. We've avoided China for a number of years. I've spent lots of my career trading China and living there. But, you know, will China respond to the Trump policies? Can they stop the debt bust that's taking place in the property market? We think they probably can. But the playbook looks eerily similar to the Japanese debt bubble bust. It's not nearly as big as the Japanese debt bubble in terms of GDP, debt to GDP ratios, but certainly the debt bust and the deflationary bust of that property market, the loss of confidence in the government, given the debt bust as well as the COVID kind of policies, has people saving more, not spending more. And in a world where Xi is trying to move to a consumption-driven economy, it's a real problem. And we don't see how that plays out just yet. We're not clear on how that plays out. So we think the equity market potentially is an opportunity, but China may well be a domino that tips along with Japan if the yen strengthens dramatically. And then finally, because given the higher cost of capital, private markets are still a concern for us. So whether that's private equity, venture capital, unlisted credit, unlisted property, we still think there's too much leverage in that system, and the cost of capital as they roll loans across in a world where rates potentially stay higher, even if at these levels, is going to put pressure on the equity component of a capital stack. So again, we are alive to those risks. That's not an exhaustive list, Dave. That's just off the top of my head. And then I think one that we should mention, which has kind of been there and thereabouts, it waxes and wanes as always, but the correlation between equities and bonds and the correlation between assets means it's a very difficult place to find diversification. We pride ourselves on our ability to find diversification, as I'm sure many managers do, but it's quite a tough place to find diversification right now outside of explicit protection strategies, which are negative carry and do cost you money in terms of portfolio returns. So, lots of risks out there.
Yeah, thanks, Maurice. And I think good to hear that you guys are applying your minds to sources of alpha as much as you are to obviously the risks associated with that. And yeah, hopefully we haven't chased off too many of the listeners discussing all of those risks. But for those who are still listening, I think, Maurice, maybe just to start to summarize and close up on the podcast, a lot of our clients know your team use these various scenarios to describe how you think markets might play out based on your views. And in the quarter four commentaries, you guys referred to the new regime, and perhaps it's a good way for us to just close out here is for you to give a bit of a summary in terms of what that new regime looks like in terms of your investment thesis.
We do look at the world through a scenario-based approach, and we've got six scenarios that we're currently running. We've had six scenarios probably for the last 12, 14 months. The new regime scenario really came into effect. We started discussing it in 2021, but we made it formal in our scenario process in 2022. And ultimately, the thesis around that scenario is that central bankers around the world would be more accepting of higher inflation. And within that world, they would be keen to cut rates to support economic growth because job losses are just unpalatable for central bankers that have become more politicized over time. We, on top of that, You've obviously got a fiscal pump priming, which again we've alluded to, that's been taking place for a number of years since COVID. That genie's out the bottle. So at the same time as you've got interest rates being cut potentially at a point where they shouldn't be cut, given growth, given inflation, you've still got this fiscal largesse taking place. I mean, if you think about something like the Science and Chips Act in the US, you think about the Jobs Act that Trump enacted, Biden followed through with, and that Chips and Science Act, we're only starting to see that policy action lead to investment and agreed investment. So it takes, 3, 4, 5 years for these things to start being deployed into markets. And so we think we're sitting with potentially a point in time, and clearly if you look at the US cutting interest rates by 50 basis points in September and the bond market selling off on the back of that, that tells you around that new regime that they're accepting higher inflation. They are accepting of higher fiscal risks with the view that they need to grow more, that they need to have better or full employment, which is really positive, we think, for equities in terms of the ability for equity counters to grow their earnings, for equity counters to keep their margins high. The flip side of that is it is a bit more risky relative or for fixed income markets. Ignore credit, but much more risky for sovereign bonds. That plays out not so much in the sovereign bond volatility, although we're seeing that, but it plays out much more in the currency market. So ultimately, it's a backdrop that lends itself to being long equities. I would suggest neutral to short bonds. It would certainly lend itself to being short, long duration bonds. It would lend itself to owning real assets like gold. And I don't want to call Bitcoin a real asset, but clearly it's been a beneficiary of this. And as we've seen interest rate cuts being priced into market, notably January last year, we had sort of 8 interest rate cuts priced into the market. September last year, we had another 8 interest rate cuts priced into markets. That world, we think, remains in place, and not just remains in place, but we think is growing, and hence it becoming our most probabilistic outcome. Very supportive for risk, very supportive for asset returns, as long as growth remains positive. And the problem with that is at what point do high yields start crimping the willingness to take risk by company executives, the willingness for bond markets to keep being supportive. Keep in mind that central banks are no longer buying their own bonds. That may well come back if inflation picks up. But ultimately, in this world, it's a very different world from what we've seen in the last 30 years or so. So that's our central tenet. As I said, we've got 6 scenarios, and we vacillate between those 6 scenarios on a weekly basis in terms of our willingness to deploy into certain assets that we've identified would be beneficiaries or not beneficiaries in each of those scenarios. So that new regime, cutting interest rates when growth is strong, employment is full, earnings going up, buybacks taking place, dividends going up, and household wealth at an all-time high in the US anyway, is a potent cocktail for further returns in equity markets and credit markets. Not so much bond markets.
Maurice, thanks very much. I think that's probably a good place for us to leave it for this podcast. Thanks again for your time and for the insights, and obviously wishing you and the team a successful year on behalf of our clients. To everyone who's listened to the podcast, thank you very much for taking an interest in listening to Maurice and the multi-asset team's views. If you'd like to further the conversation, reach out to myself or one of the other investment specialists, and we'll be happy to engage anytime.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks to our listeners.